Lyndon Baines Johnson. Lyndon Baines Johnson, President of the United States, assuming an office which an act of wanton hatred had left vacant, President Johnson picked up the reins of government with an assurance born of understanding and experience, and entered upon a task for which he was preeminently fitted. A ministry of reconciliation joined with vigorous pursuit of peace and human welfare. He has labored to improve the lot of citizens deprived of civil rights and of economic opportunity. He has yet avoided those doctrinaire antagonisms which can render the most humane of purposes inhumane. He has shown a realistic awareness of human complexity, a worthily American respect for diversity, and a will to act always in the spirit of an immortal predecessor, with malice toward none and with charity for all. Upon this greatly gifted man and leader of men, the university respectfully confers the degree Doctor of Civil Law. Mr. President, I present Lyndon Baines Johnson to receive the honorary degree Doctor of Civil Law.
I confer upon you, Lyndon Baines Johnson, President of the United States, the degree Doctor of Civil Law, and admit you to all its rights, honors, and privileges, and the pen with which your diploma was signed. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Lyndon Johnson, President of the United States.
President Hatcher, Governor Romney, Senators McNamara and Hart, Congressman Meader and Stabler, and other members of the fine Michigan delegation, members of the graduating class, my fellow Americans. It is a great pleasure to be here today. This university has been co-educational since 1870. But I do not believe it was on the basis of your accomplishments that a Detroit high school girl said, and I quote, "In choosing a college, you first have to decide whether you want a co-educational school or an educational school." Well, we can find both here at Michigan, although perhaps at different hours. I came out here today very anxious to meet the Michigan student whose father told a friend of mine that his son's education had been a real value. It stopped his mother from bragging about him. I have come today from the turmoil of your capital to the tranquility of your campus to speak about the future of your country. The purpose of protecting the life of our nation and preserving the liberty of our citizens is to pursue the happiness of our people. Our success in that pursuit is the test of our success as a nation. For a century, we labored to settle and to subdue a continent. For half a century, we called upon unbounded invention and untiring energy to create an order of plenty for all of our people. The challenge of the next half century is whether we have the wisdom to use that wealth to enrich and elevate our national life and to advance the quality of our American civilization. Your imagination and your initiative and your indignation will determine whether we build a society where progress is the servant of our needs, or a society where old values and new visions are buried under unbridled growth. For in your time, we have the opportunity to move not only toward the rich society and the powerful society, but upward to the great society. The great society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The great society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents. It is a place where leisure is a welcome chance to build and reflect, not a feared cause of boredom and restlessness. It is a place where the city of man serves not only the needs of the body and the demands of commerce, but the desire for beauty and the hunger for community. It is a place where man can renew contact with nature. It is a place which honors creation for its own sake and for what it adds to the understanding of the race. It is a place where men are more concerned with the quality of their goals than the quantity of their goods. But most of all, the great society is not a safe harbor, a resting place, a final objective, a finished work. It is a challenge constantly renewed, beckoning us toward a destiny where the meaning of our lives matches the marvelous products of our labor. So I want to talk to you today about three places where we begin to build the great society. In our cities, in our countryside, and in our classrooms. Many of you will live to see the day, perhaps 50 years from now, when there will be 400 million Americans. Four-fifths of them in urban areas. In the remainder of this century, urban population will double. City land will double. And we will have to build homes and highways and facilities equal to all those built since this country was first settled. So in the next 40 years, we must rebuild the entire urban United States. Aristotle said, men come together in cities in order to live. But they remain together in order to live the good life. It is harder and harder to live the good life in American cities today. The catalog of ills is long. There is the decay of the centers and the despoiling of the suburbs. There's not enough housing for our people or transportation for our traffic. Open land is vanishing and old landmarks are violated. Worst of all, expansion is eroding these precious and time-honored values of community with neighbors and communion with nature. The loss of these values breeds loneliness and boredom and indifference. And our society will never be great until our cities are great. Today, the frontier of imagination and innovation is inside those cities and not beyond their borders. New experiments are already going on. It will be the task of your generation to make the American city a place where future generations will come not only to live, but to live the good life. And I understand that if I stayed here tonight, I would see that Michigan students are really doing their best to live the good life. This is the place where the Peace Corps was started. It is inspiring to see how all of you, while you're in this country, are trying so hard to live at the level of the people. A second place where we begin to build the great society is in our countryside. We have always prided ourselves on being not only America the strong and America the free, but America the beautiful. Today, that beauty is in danger. The water we drink, the food we eat, the very air that we breathe are threatened with pollution. Our parks are overcrowded. Our seashores overburdened. Green fields and dense forests are disappearing. A few years ago, we were greatly concerned about the ugly American. Today, we must act to prevent an ugly America. For once the battle is lost, once the battle is lost, once our natural splendor is destroyed, it can never be recaptured. And once man can no longer walk with beauty or wonder at nature, his spirit will wither and his sustenance be wasted. A third place to build the great society is in the classrooms of America. There, your children's lives will be shaped. Our society will not be great until every young mind is set free to scan the father's reaches of thought and imagination. We are still far from that goal. Today, 8 million adult Americans, more than the entire population of Michigan, have not finished 5 years of school. Nearly 20 million have not finished 8 years of school. Nearly 54 million, more than one quarter of all America, have not even finished high school. Each year, more than 100,000 high school graduates with proved ability do not enter college because they cannot afford it. And if we cannot educate today's youth, what will we do in 1970 when elementary school enrollment will be 5 million greater than 1960? And high school enrollment will rise by 5 million, and college enrollment will increase by more than 3 million. In many places, classrooms are overcrowded and curricula are outdated. Most of our qualified teachers are underpaid. and many of our paid teachers are unqualified. So we must give every child a place to sit and a teacher to learn from. Poverty must not be a bar to learning, and learning must offer an escape from poverty. But more classrooms and more teachers are not enough. We must seek an educational system which grows in excellence as it grows in size. And this means better training for our teachers. It means preparing youth to enjoy their hours of leisure as well as their hours of labor. It means exploring new techniques of teaching to find new ways to stimulate the love of learning and the capacity for creation. These are three of the central issues of the Great Society. While our government has many programs directed at those issues, I do not pretend that we have the full answer to those problems. But I do promise this: we are going to assemble the best thought and the broadest knowledge from all over the world to find those answers for America. I intend to establish working groups to prepare a series of White House conferences and meetings on the cities, on natural beauty, on the quality of education, and on other emerging challenges. And from these meetings and from this inspiration and from these studies, we will begin to set our course toward the Great Society. The solution to these problems not rest on a massive program in Washington, nor can it rely solely on the strained resources of local authority. They require us to create new concepts of cooperation, a creative federalism between the national capital and the leaders of local communities. Woodrow Wilson once wrote, "Every man sent out from his university should be a man of his nation as well as a man of his time." Within your lifetime, powerful forces already loosed will take us toward a way of life beyond the realm of our experience, almost beyond the bounds of our imagination. For better or for worse, your generation has been appointed by history to deal with those problems and to lead America toward a new age. You have the chance never before afforded to any people in any age. You can help build a society where the demands of morality and the needs of the spirit can be realized in the life of the nation. So will you join in the battle to give every citizen the full equality which God enjoins and the law requires, whatever his belief or race or the color of his skin? Will you join in the battle to give every citizen an escape from the crushing weight of poverty? Will you join in the battle to make it possible for all nations to live in enduring peace as neighbors and not as mortal enemies. Will you join in the battle to build the great society, to prove that our material progress is only the foundation on which we will build a richer life of mind and spirit? There are those timid souls that say this battle cannot be won, that we are condemned to a soulless wealth. I do not agree. We have the power to shape the civilization that we want, but we need your will and your labor and your hearts if we are to build that kind of society. Those who came to this land sought to build more than just a new country. They sought a new world. So I have come here today to your campus to say that you can make their vision our reality. So let us, from this moment, begin our work so that in the future men will look back and say, it was then, after a long and weary way, that man turned the exploits of his genius to the full enrichment of his life. Thank you. Goodbye.
That was the President of the United States, Lyndon B. Johnson, delivering the commencement address at the University of Michigan's 120th commencement. Here once again is President Hatcher.
The audience will now join in singing the yellow and the blue. The Reverend Fuller will then pronounce the benediction, after which the exercises will be concluded in the traditional manner by the bugle call of taps, followed by reveille. The audience will please remain standing until President Johnson and those on the platform have left the stadium.
Send us now forth with thy blessing and as thy servants. Where there is prejudice or ignorance, make us bold to speak truth. Where there is injustice and evil, give us courage and a passion for good. Where there is need, fill our heart with compassion. Where there is hatred, grant us grace to love. Where there is trouble and tension, give us wisdom to be thy agents of peace and healing. having been endowed with opportunity and knowledge, now make us ready to serve with unselfish hearts as the builders of a nobler order and the heralds of a brighter day. And let the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen.
And now, the President of the United States, the Governor of the State of Michigan, the President of the University of Michigan, members of the administration, the Board of Regents, and the deans of the colleges and schools of the University of Michigan will be led from the platform out of the stadium. President Johnson today, during his commencement address, was given healthy rounds of applause 11 times. He chose to depart from his prepared text 3 times, mentioning once the fact that the Peace Corps had been mentioned here first by his predecessor, the late John F. Kennedy. The President also today coined a phrase which we may hear many times in the future, the phrase, the Great Society. Capital G, capital S, the Great Society. He mentioned it twice here at this commencement address for the University of Michigan's 120th commencement. Dr. Harlan Hatcher, the president of the university, added a light touch of humor to the ceremonies after the reading of the citation by Professor of Law Joseph R. Julin. Dr. Hatcher said to President Johnson, we admit you to the rights and privileges of the University of Michigan. And then he added, and I present to you the pen with which your diploma was signed. President Hatcher, as you may recall, was in Washington some months ago, present at the signing of the National School Aid Bill, and President Johnson presented President Hatcher with one of the pens used to sign at that time. President Johnson spoke before the largest audience he has faced since becoming President of the United States. And today marked exactly 6 months from the day the late President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Texas. You have been listening to the 120th commencement of the University of Michigan, held in the Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor, before 4,900 members of the graduating class, their families and friends, numbering over 90,000 people. As you can hear now, the President is just leaving the stadium, going out through the great tunnel, outside the stadium to the east grounds, where he and his aides will board the 4 helicopters awaiting him, taking him back to Metropolitan Airport, and there boarding Air Force No. 1 to return to Washington. President Lyndon Baines Johnson was awarded an honorary Doctor of Civil Law degree. He arrived in the state of Michigan at 9:16 this morning and was flown here by helicopter, landing outside the vast Michigan Stadium at 9:50.